views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have. Told you turn the other cheek, and they met it with a bat. Fucking protesting them citizens. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, you died, good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around and pump crack right up in your city. And they just turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. The one that you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
For those of you who good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today's date is January 28, 2016. It is a Thursday afternoon, and I hope that my voice reaches you and finds you and relatively safe, D. And, because it's a battlefield out there for real. Today, we do have a guest scheduled for you. We'll be on for about an hour bringing you some news, information, and commentary. Just some quick news before we announce our guest. But today, Hillary Clinton, who is, according to some polls, the front runner for the Democratic presidential nomination. And today, she met with black religious leaders in Philadelphia. Where some of these leaders said that she was the most qualified candidate seeking the Democratic nomination. Now, how black people can just forget Mrs. Clinton and Mr. Clinton's ties to crimes against the black global community is of chief concern to me. Could it be that these people are just uninformed and political pedestrians, and they don't really keep up with politics and policy and what's going on in the world in regards to politics and to some of the policies and how they have not only impacted black people here in the United States domestically, but how it has, like I said, impacted the entire black global community. When you look at what's going on in Haiti right now and looking at even when Bill Clinton's administration was in power, the things that they did, acts of injustice in Haiti. And then after the earthquake that destroyed much of Haiti, and how the Clintons were invited to come in there. Sometimes we are our own worst enemies, right? And so how the Clintons came into Haiti, and how one of Hillary Clinton's brothers somehow, you know, he's on this board of directors for this mining company because of some gold deposits, newly discovered gold deposits were found as a result of the earthquake in Haiti. And need I point out to you how these Western, American, British, whatever, European mining companies go into predominantly black nations and just rip them off for their resources. And a lot of times we invite them to come in. I want to speak to Mr. West Thayer today of the Afrosynergy News channel, which you can find on YouTube. And I want to speak to him, or rather I would like him to speak to us about the war crimes Hillary Clinton was at the center of in Libya, and how the American news media has failed to even question her over her role in the ethnic cleansing of the North African nation. And Libya still has not recovered from the devastation that was unleashed upon it by the Obama administration. And based on recent emails from Hillary Clinton's private server, it shows that, you know, it's just confirmation that they lied about everything, just like Bush lied about Saddam Hussein, President Obama, and the rest of the Obama administration, including Hillary Clinton, lied about what was going on in Libya, lied about Gaddafi. And now we know because of her poor handling, which may even rise to a criminal level of classified emails and whatnot. Now we got the confirmation that this was all lies, and they really went in there to prop up the American dollar, as we've talked about on this network over several different programs, about how Gaddafi was proposing a African currency for the African Union, which was going to be backed by the gold dinar. And then also from the emails, we know that that was the French prime reason for joining in on the slaughtering of all those people in Libya, so that they can continue to prop up the French franc and force African nations to use the French franc. And so this is just more of the same, more colonialism. And, you know, the Obama administration lied, and a whole lot of black people died as a result. And we're not talking about this in the black community. All right. We are not talking about it. And after I speak with Mr. West, who I believe we do have on the line, but after I get through speaking to him, today is the International Holocaust Remembrance Day. Today is the date that the United Nations chose to commemorate the victims of the Holocaust during World War II, the victims of the Nazis. And I will continue to point out that more than just millions of Jews were estimated killed, but Afro-Germans, black people, gypsies, people who politically were classified as communists, and anybody who spoke out against the Nazi party. They wiped out a whole bunch of people, man. And so today was International Holocaust Remembrance Day. And President Obama gave remarks today at the Israeli embassy, participating in this ceremony called the Righteous Among Nations Award. And it just seemed a bit hypocritical to me. It may not seem hypocritical to you all out there, but it just seemed hypocritical to me for a war criminal like President Obama to be speaking at the embassy of a country that practices a racist apartheid and that has long been engaged in human rights crimes against the Palestinians, and also practicing racism and eugenics, talking about the Nazis, right? The eugenics that's being practiced against black Jews, including a sterilization program to cut the birth rates of the Ethiopian Jewish community in Israel by 20% to 50%, according to various reports. And so I just don't see. Well, yes, I do. I do see, because I know the American news media is part of the American Empire, and I know that they really, really want that vicious criminal Hillary Clinton to become the next chief executive officer of USA Inc. And so, of course, they're not going to even mention. I haven't seen one mainstream report that's mentioning these emails related to Libya and the fact that she knew that those Arab militias, racist Arab militias, were ethnically cleansing Libya of black people, whether they were black people who were Libyan citizens or whether they were Africans from neighboring African nations who had come there to work. All right. And so, again, this is why I say, man, we have to support our own independent media outlets. And without further delay, I want to bring on independent black media producer, Mr. West Thayer of Afrosynergy News. Thank you for joining us, Mr. West.
Hello, Brother Scotty. How are you?
I'm probably doing better than most people living behind these enemy lines, so I don't like to complain about my personal problems too much. I come on here to just complain about, you know, the oppression that we're all facing. But thank you for asking, Mr. West.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on your program again. And as I was listening to your intro, I said to myself, I said, Scotty is doing an excellent job all by himself. So you stated it and you've articulated it very, very well. And the struggle of our people continue not only here in the United States of America, but in Africa and throughout the diaspora. The key topic, I guess, today is Libya.
Yes, sir. That's why I wanted to bring you on. And I just want to commend you and Afro Synergy News for the excellent job that you did in reporting the facts that were on the ground in Libya while all of this was occurring in 2011. And so I just want to commend you, sir. And so that is why I wanted to invite you back on and talk about this, because now everything that you were saying in 2011 has been confirmed in Hillary Clinton's private emails that, you know, she was mishandling these classified emails. But I'm very glad that she did, because, you know, this is just more confirmation as to what you and others were saying about what was going on in Libya. Now, I just want to sit back and I just want to let people listen to you. So wherever you want to start, let's start from the beginning. With, you know, we had Susan Rice and Hillary Clinton and other members of the Obama administration talking about, you know, Gaddafi was saying Gaddafi's going to slaughter all these people in Benghazi, and then they're using African mercenaries who are taken by Agra and just going on a mass rape spree. So let's start there with the lies and then progress through that, if you don't mind.
Okay. Yes, I mean, that's very good. But before we get into the grandiose lies that were told leading up to the savage criminal war in Libya, I think we should first just briefly, very briefly, talk about where Libya was before all of this, before all these lies.
Yes, sir.
And very quickly, Libya was number 51 in the Human Development Index, the United Nations Human Development Index. Now, that index tells you how well a country is doing with its people overall. So it was number 51. So it was ranked among the top in the world economically and socially for its own people. Now, Libya was also number one in being the least, where you would have the least amount of divorces. Number one, Libya also had no debt, no foreign debt. All Libyan adults had a free college education if they chose to go to college in Libya or anywhere in the world. It was paid for by the Libyan government. Libya was the most prosperous African nation. More prosperous than South Africa, more prosperous than Morocco and all of the other African nations. And Libya also paid for the majority of the money, to the tune of more than $350 million, for the satellite, the African communication satellite that was put into orbit by China. Libya paid for that.
And that was to provide cell phone.
In with about $50 million.
Yeah, that was to provide cell phone service, right?
Pardon?
That was to provide communication services like cell phones and whatnot, because the Western corporations were gouging people in Africa to have, you know, cell phone service and stuff like that. Am I correct in that?
Exactly. So Libya was responsible for helping Africans all over the continent save a tremendous amount of money in no longer having to go through European communications for telephone, for internet. So they save a lot of money based on that. So I wanted to just put that out front first. Those are some of the great things about Libya under the leadership of Muammar Gaddafi. Muammar Gaddafi, when he took power in Libya around about 1967, he indicated that he and his family would live in a tent so long as any Libyan did not have their own home. So he went about building on a huge building spree there in Libya, building homes, also building the great man-made river, which provided fresh water throughout much of Libya. So these were some of the great things that Muammar Gaddafi did for his people.
Mr. West.
Yeah.
I want to continue on that vein, because right now, you know, Hillary Clinton is facing Bernie Sanders, and some of the things that Bernie Sanders is proposing, like free college, already a reality for all Libyans in Libya, as you laid out. But he's also talking about free health care for all, Medicare, Medicaid for all, single payer system. I didn't hear you mention anything about the healthcare system, because from what I read in Libya, their healthcare was free for everybody.
That's right. It was all free. But as I said, I wanted to make it brief, so I'm not going to cover everything.
Okay, I got you.
Libya's had a great life.
Mm-hmm.
But now, here come the lies. You saw Hillary meet in Washington, D.C., with Gaddafi's son, Mustafa. They met there at the State Department. She's out front in front of the camera, shaking hands with him at this event. She's wearing a red dress. So I believe it was a red dress. So she's shaking hands with him. And then a few months later, the following year, he's dead. And Hillary Clinton, when they asked her about the death of Muammar Gaddafi, Hillary Clinton says, "We came, we saw, and he died." And then she laughs about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I've said before, Hillary is a psychotic woman. And you mentioned in your intro about her visiting Philadelphia here recently, maybe today, and how black leaders are putting their support behind her. Well, I ask the question to black people: are you better off overall, collectively, than you were 45 years ago? And if the answer is no, then that is an indictment upon these black political and social leaders, most of them. That's an indictment upon them. Bill Clinton, Hillary's husband, he was responsible for incarcerating or imprisoning a record number of black people in the United States of America. And yet, you have today these silly, these idiotic, these foolish, these bought-off black leaders, some of them who will kowtow to Hillary Clinton. As I said, she's psychotic. Now, I've also indicated that she is not going to become president of the United States. And generally, almost always, based upon scientific facts, I make these predictions, and generally, I'm correct. She will not be in the White House. So, but she was the architect behind the United States going into a war in Libya, under the auspices, under the name of NATO, which is only supposed to be involved in European military matters.
Right, for the protection. Yeah, for the protection of Europe from Russia. It's part of the extension of the so-called Cold War between the Russians and Europe and America.
That's right, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, mm-hmm. NATO. So, but for 8 months, NATO bombed Libya around the clock for 8 months, solid. And at one point, near the end of it, NATO lied and said that their bombs had only killed no more than 6 Libyan civilians, when in fact, thousands of Libyans, civilians, and military personnel were slaughtered by NATO's bombs based upon the lies that you articulated earlier in your program, the lies about Muammar Gaddafi is killing peaceful protesters. That was a damn lie. Muammar Gaddafi is using aircraft to bomb and kill peaceful protesters. That was a lie. Muammar Gaddafi has hired African mercenaries to kill peaceful protesters. That was another damn lie. And then you also mentioned the lie about Muammar Gaddafi is providing his troops with Viagra. These were all lies concocted by Nicolas Sarkozy, who was president of France at that time, and Hillary Clinton, who was Secretary of State of the United States at that time, and Suzanne Rice, right here in the United States. It was Hillary Clinton who convinced and nagged the hell out of Barack Obama until Barack Obama finally decided to join France in going in and doing to Libya what George W. Bush did to Iraq. So, in fact, Libya is Barack Obama's Iraq, as Iraq is to George W. Bush. So when we look at the lies that they told, Hillary Clinton is not fit to be president of the United States. And as I said, she is, in fact, psychotic. Now, you also have, now, these are some things that are in the news right now. You have Tony Blair, who is now being accosted and attacked about his relationship with Muammar Gaddafi. And it relates and it ties all the way back to the Irish Republican Army. Because Muammar Gaddafi, he verbally has stated his support for the IRA a long time ago.
Okay.
Muammar Gaddafi has stated his support for Nelson Mandela and stated his indication that he was against apartheid in South Africa. So Muammar Gaddafi had a long, long history of being a freedom fighter and also providing assistance to blacks and others around the world who were fighting for liberation. But what we saw in 2011 under the Obama administration, ran and conducted by Hillary Rodham Clinton, what we saw was an attack upon one of the greatest freedom fighters in the 20th and 21st century.
And a Pan-Africanist. Yeah, a Pan-Africanist as well.
That's right. That's right. He, as you indicated in your intro, he was well into the process of forming an African currency backed by gold, backed by the Libyan dinar. And of course, the bankers, the international bankers of the United States, of France, of Britain, they wanted to ensure that never happened. That is why they went in after Muammar Gaddafi. That is why they went in fact, even after Iraq many years ago, because Saddam Hussein had stopped selling oil based on the dollar.
Right.
He was selling the oil based on the euro.
Right.
So that was an attack upon those nations because they were getting out from under the petrodollar system.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the same situation that is now developing with Russia, China, and other nations.
Yes.
They are also moving away from the whole petrodollar scheme.
Well, they're also moving away from the Western controlled global financial system because China, you know, we got a program on Black Talk Radio Network called Tando Radio Show, and they focus on a whole lot of, you know, financial type stuff that's going on. And I, you know, I engineer the program, but I listen intently because I'm learning a lot. But China, you know, is actually in the process of setting up another global financial system, and a lot of other nations have signed on to participate.
That's right. That's right. So much of this, most of this, centers around the whole petrol or the oil and dollar scheme that the Western bankers have been perpetrating upon the world for the last, well, more than the last generation. So, what we saw in Libya, and right now the United States currently is now talking about becoming once again militarily involved in Libya right now, today. Now, also, I had an opportunity. I had a free pass, actually. I went to see the movie 13 Hours. And that movie was about
Benghazi.
The killing of Christopher Stevens, the ambassador, American ambassador in Benghazi.
Okay.
Now, American media and Western European media, they've hyped this up, the whole Libyan situation up, as Benghazi.
Right, right.
Benghazi is just one small doggone part of Libya. So it is not about Benghazi. Benghazi is where the four Americans were killed at, and Christopher Stevens, actually he deserved to die because he was one of the main architects on the ground
right
behind what happened in Libya.
Mr.
He
West.
He was helping to run guns from Egypt, from the Egyptian border, into Libya.
Right.
Prior to this whole uprising in Libya. And then after the Libyan government was overthrown, Christopher Stevens was also behind and helping to move Libyan military arms from Libya into Turkey and into Syria.
Right, right, right.
He was behind that into the hands of terrorists who were working on behalf of the United States, France, Britain, Israel, to overthrow the Syrian government of Bashar al-Assad in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
So these situations, what we see happening, this is tyranny. It is tyranny on the part of the American government.
And with collusion, as you pointed out, though, you know, I did an interview with a communications professor who studies media, and she had wrote an article, and this was when that, what was that movie, American Sniper, came out. And so I had brought her on the program to talk about the long history of Hollywood in producing these propaganda films to lie to the American people and to also to promote nationalism. Because as you said, this movie is only focusing on American lives that were lost. And I agree with you. Christopher Stevens deserved to die because, you know, technically Libya was a ally of the United States going back to 2005 in the Bush administration against terrorism, because Gaddafi was going after the actual terrorists in Africa. I believe I might have heard it on Afro Synergy News that Gaddafi was the first one to issue a warrant for the arrest of Osama bin Laden because of the bombing of embassies in Africa.
Well, what you have, this is a fact. Muammar Gaddafi had indicated when Hillary Clinton, Susan Rice, and others, Nicolas Sarkozy, when they were lying, Gaddafi indicated that terrorists, Al-Qaeda, and other terrorist entities are trying to overthrow Libya and that they're fighting in Libya.
Mm-hmm.
And that Gaddafi had indicated that he was fighting against these terrorists. Well, Gaddafi was right. I mean, look at it today. Look
yes.
at it right now.
Yes.
I mean, the terrorists are ruling in Libya.
Right.
That's a fact. And that was actually the desire of the United States in the first place. In Nigeria, Boko Haram is terrorizing Nigeria. Not only Nigeria, but those nations that are bordering Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
That I indicated many, many years ago, before there ever was a Boko Haram, that the United States wanted to destabilize Nigeria. And then here along comes Boko Haram. You have to ask the question, where the hell are these mostly uneducated terrorists getting these weapons from?
Mm-hmm. and
ammunition. Where are they getting the money from to get these weapons? Mm-hmm. They're getting these weapons from, mostly from the West, from Israel. This is where most of these weapons are coming from. So then you have to ask, well, how is it in the interest of the West to create all of this terrorism? As I have stated for more than 10 years, in Africa, throughout Africa, and this applies to the Near East, like Syria, Iraq, and those areas as well, wherever a nation is involved in war and is involved in instability, those are the areas where Western corporations earn their greatest profits.
Right.
That is where Wall Street is very happy about it, because they're getting the resources from those areas more cheaply than they would normally or ordinarily get those resources. That pertains to Nigeria and Libya and Somalia and elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
This is the name of the game. Their goal is to break up things, is to create chaos, and then because they, assuming that they will have the greatest amount of power after they've created these chaos, they will then go in and establish it and reestablish it, remake the area in the way that they seem fit to do so.
You know, President.
This is what they're doing.
Yeah, President. But to your point about why would the United States and these other allied countries with the United States, mostly the British, the Israelis, and others like that, why they would be creating so much chaos and whatnot, and how are, and you mentioned how they profited from it. Not that I'm holding up President of Eisenhower as some kind of moral man or you know, good person or anything like that, but he did warn during his presidency about the military industrial complex, and you know, his prophecy about it is evident. It has come true.
That is so true. And anyone who is a student of history,
mm-hmm.
you know that most things have been done before, and it only repeats itself.
Right.
So the United States is not the only nation to go through this.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know and you understand history, then you can tell people, you can predict what tomorrow is going to be. And what is tomorrow going to be for America? America is going to fall. That is America's future. And it's not too far in the distant future. It is going to fall, and it is also going to be partitioned up, split up, divided up. That's coming. Now, how so? How will that happen? It will happen because, number one, it is trying to destroy Russia. Number two, it is also trying to diminish China. So what the results of that is that China and Russia have come together. Economically, they're coming together. Militarily, they're coming together. Not only China and Russia, but also Pakistan and Russia. They're now doing military drills together. So what you're seeing is you're seeing an alignment of these Eastern powers, Russia, China, Pakistan. That's just to name three, and there are others as well, Iran, and more. They're coming together. Now, for what cause and for what purpose? Well, you see, NATO is encroaching upon Russia. It is encroaching even upon Africa, because against Libya, they use NATO against the small, tiny nation of Libya. So you see a gathering of these nations together. And then you also see among the Western European powers, they are also, some of them are offended by NATO. And when I say NATO, I'm really talking about the United States of America. So you have some European states, Western European states, who are offended by the United States because they see the United States as a bully. You have some of them, these Western European countries, who don't want to continue these sanctions against Russia. But the United States will bring about tremendous economic and other pressure, bully pressure, upon those nations to toe the line with those sanctions. So these Western European nations, they are more and more talking about the creation of a European Union military. That is something that is outside of NATO. Now, years ago, when Rumsfeld was defense secretary and these Europeans were talking about this European Union military, well, Rumsfeld pretty much said, oh no, you're not going to do that. That's not going to happen. You got NATO, and that's where you're going to be, paraphrasing Donald Rumsfeld. So you have a situation where you have these nations of the East who are aligning themselves militarily and economically against the United States. And then also, more quietly, you have members of NATO, members of the European Union, who are also secretly and sort of quietly aligning themselves against the United States. Mm-hmm. So these are the things that are happening, and it's happening because of this bully attitude of many of the American leaders. You know, they're using such terms as, we are exceptional. You heard George Bush use that term. You heard Barack Obama use that term. Well, what the hell does that mean, exceptional? That means that we can do whatever we want to do.
I was just about, you took the words out of my mouth. I was about to say that we can do anything we want to do, and there's nothing you can do about it.
That's right. And when Bush and Cheney was about to come into power, these right-wing think tanks, their words were exactly this, that America should enforce her will against whomever she wants, as often as she wants, and there is no reason why she cannot rule until the end of time. This was the attitude leading up to the devastation against Iraq, based upon known lies. It had nothing to do with bad intelligence. Absolutely nothing. I knew, and the CIA knew, and all of the intelligence agencies knew that Iraq had no weapons of mass destruction. And just as they know, Iran has no weapons of mass destruction. But it was the Zionist state of Israel who was promoting those lies and pushing and promoting it through Congress, through the American Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And those lies prevailed.
Mr. West,
Barack Obama, to give him some credit, he did not buy into all of that relative to Syria. But he was using the terrorists as the American boots on the ground in Syria with the purpose and the agenda and the goal of overthrowing the legitimate government of Syria, just as they had done in Libya. So America is a criminal entity.
Right. Mr. West.
You have the situation, and not to get off of this main subject, but it is sort of related. Because you have the situation where you have a genocide of blacks in Flint, Michigan. The poisoning of blacks with the water. Now, the majority population in that area of Flint are blacks. Anywhere between 56% and 70% of the people in Flint are black. But that's a poisoning of the people. These are things that are now coming to the attention of international lawyers within the United Nations.
Yeah. Mr. West, I do need to take a station identification break. I want to open up the phone lines in case anybody has any questions or comments they would like to make. You can give us a call on the conference line at 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032 pound. Just hit *6 and 1 to come in on air. You can also use our web-based flash phone and dial in from anywhere in the world as long as you have a pair of headsets. And the studio line, that number is 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030. When we come back on the other side, Mr. West, I do want to take it back to the crimes against black people in Libya, because I don't even think we have a true picture of the magnitude of the masses of black people as well as other Libyans loyal to their government. I don't think we have a true picture of the amount of people who have been killed there or displaced. So I want to refocus back on that, because, you know, it's being confirmed through these emails of Hillary Clinton. And it is only because I know that the corporate media is the fourth wing of the U.S. government, and all they do is push state-sponsored propaganda. So I know that's why it's not being in mainstream media, but I would think that within grassroots circles that this would be discussed more. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. Our guest today is Mr. T. West of Afro Synergy News. We'll be right back on the other side of this quick break.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com. Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio, new black media for the new millennium.
And welcome back. Mr. West, you touched upon a number of things, but the last thing you mentioned about it, they're getting the attention of international lawyers. Were you aware that there is a UN, a group of people from the UN who are touring the United States? I think they went to Jacksonville, Alabama. They were in Baltimore about a week and a half ago. I think they're also supposed to go to New York, and I can't think of the other place. But what they have been doing is gathering evidence and taking testimony from African descendant people here in America about the human rights abuses of the United States government against them, you know. And were you aware that that was going on right now?
Yes, I am aware of it. Also, Jackson, Mississippi was one of the cities that they visited. Yes, there are a number of cities that these members of the United Nations are visiting, and that's good. That's a step in the right direction, because for hundreds of years, the United States government has been involved in genocide of black people, and definitely genocide of the native peoples of this land, some of which were black. Mm-hmm. And are black.
Right.
So I am very much aware of that. Now, also, you mentioned about the blacks in Libya.
Yes, yes.
Those who were killed and murdered and slaughtered by NATO, and also by the terrorists that NATO was backing.
Right. And see, Hillary Clinton's emails do show that she had direct knowledge that these NATO-backed terrorists were committing war crimes.
Yeah. I mean, if that was easily, if anyone actually who wanted to know, they would know. Mm-hmm. They would have known. I know that I covered that whole war situation in Libya in 2011, probably more expensive than anyone at that time. And there was a city in Libya called Tawarga. Tawarga was predominantly and overwhelmingly a black city. These were black Libyans, people who were natives of Libya, and also you had some African immigrants from other countries who lived in Tawarga. That city was targeted and bombed by NATO planes. They killed men, women, and children. I have pictures of that. I have video of that. They also, today, the terrorists, when they entered Towarga, they wrote upon the walls that this city will not be inhabited anymore. It's a ghost city now. It was a city that consisted one time of at least up to 60,000 people. It is now empty. That's genocide.
Yeah, do we know where these people are?
Perpetrated by the United States and its allies.
Do we know where these people are? I mean, were they all killed and buried in mass graves, as I have seen pictures of mass graves filled with black bodies, or were they able to escape?
Well, some of them did escape.
Okay.
And many of them were killed, and there were mass graves, and there were camps eventually set up in parts of Libya. Many of the people went into those camps, and in those camps, some of those people were tortured. And we also have pictures and or
video
of some of that torturing that was happening at that time. Now, because of what's happening in Libya right now, and because it is not too safe to be there, some of this may still be going on.
Mm-hmm.
But much of the media is not too safe for much of the media to go into Libya at this time.
Right.
So, but these were crimes against humanity, war crimes committed and at the least facilitated by the members of NATO. War crimes. The Obama administration. And the Obama administration, after the bombing of Libya had ceased, Obama came out and publicly through the media, he lied. He knowingly lied. He called Gaddafi a brutal dictator. And he really slandered the Gaddafi name in the media. Obama lied. And when in 2011, when they were killing and targeting the black city of Towarga, I indicated and I reported at that time, I said that if African Americans don't speak up against what this black president, Barack Obama, is doing and is allowing to be done in Libya, they are going to step up the killing of blacks in the streets of America.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of our people were silent,
yes,
about what was being done in Libya.
You know, I'll never forget this, Mr. West. I'll never forget this. They had the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. And Dr. King, a great man of peace, who called the United States the greatest purveyor of violence on the earth. All right. His daughter, I'll never forget this. His daughter stood on the steps. I don't know if it was the Lincoln Memorial or wherever they were on the Washington Mall. But she sat up there and gave a speech and talked about let freedom ring in Libya. And because I had been tuned in to Afro Synergy News and watching your reports and then doing more research and getting reports, you know, from other alternative media sources, I was like, do she know how many black people was being slaughtered in Libya? Does she know anything about Libya at all? You know, because when you came on, and I'm glad you did today, and you laid out just how comfortable life was for people and prosperous it was in Libya. And for that black woman, a daughter of a man of peace, a man who was killed because he started really speaking truth to power about the United States government and its endless wars around the world. For her to say that, man, is I was like, wow, that it just blew my mind, Mr. West, for her to say something like that.
Yes, well, she's just an example of certain black leaders or black voices. Some of them aren't leaders, really, but they're voices. Who they lie, they knowingly lie to ingratiate themselves among the killers within the government, within certain corporations, they knowingly lie. And I say that with emphasis. They knowingly lie. These are not dumb people. These are not really, on that subject matter, they're not really ignorant people. They're doing this purposely. And some of them do it because they're going to gain certain benefits from lying. That's why they do it. Mm-hmm. And these type of people, they must be held accountable, and they must never, ever be trusted, ever.
Is that what we're seeing now in Philadelphia? We also see it in South Carolina, where these black leaders, some of them are elected, like James Clyburn, not James Clyburn. What is that Georgia congressman name? I think, or South Carolina, I can't think of his name. But then even John Lewis, yeah. who, you know, is that what they're doing? Is that why they're propping up Hillary Clinton and getting behind Hillary Clinton, despite knowing the Clintons' ties to the re-enslavement of black people through, you know, the drug war and, you know, mandatory minimums and all of that? And they got to know about what really went down in Libya. I don't think John Lewis or any of those other Al Hastings, any of those congressmen, congresswomen up there are ignorant to what happened in Libya. So that's what they're doing now, huh? They're just trying to prop up themselves to put themselves in position to benefit from what they hope to be a second Clinton administration.
Yes, all of them know. All of them know. They're all looking for certain benefits, something. Some of them, maybe they're not getting any benefits from it, but it's just the fact that, hey, my name is on the list for supporting Hillary Rodham Clinton. My name is there. So they, all of these men and women, black men and women, virtually all of them, they know the truth. They know it. So we as black people, we have to ask the damn question once again. Mm-hmm. Collectively, are our people better off than they were 45 years ago in this country? And the answer is no. Mm-hmm. And because the answer is no, that is an indictment upon virtually almost all of these doggone politicians, especially most of the ones who've been sitting in their positions for decades, John Lewis included. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, what they did 30 years ago is not going to suffice for what black America faced today.
Yeah, many of them voted, Mr. West, many of them voted for the very policies and programs that are impacting black people, whether we're talking about the specific names of some of the programs escape me right now, but the omnibus bills and giving all these military grade weapons to police departments. And these people voted for that stuff. And now they want to come out and act like, oh, now, you know, this is bad. This is, you know, we need to do this. We need to reform this and reform that. When they are they help architect it. Their votes, you know, they voted for this type stuff.
They voted for that. That is true. That most of them are totally, totally in support of anything Israel, anything.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've said before, whenever you have a foreign policy that wastes, that throws away trillions of dollars, that is money that is not going towards and for programs within black communities and other communities across this country. Those lead pipes, that situation in Flint, Michigan, is from neglect, domestic neglect. While at the same time, you have a doggone savage war criminal in the regime in the state of Israel who has demanded that the Obama administration now give them additional billions of dollars.
Yeah, $5 billion. $5 billion. I read that. We give them I'm not going to say we, but U.S. taxpayers give them $1 billion. A year. That's more than any other nation. I think the second one is Egypt that gets the second most amount. But yeah, I read that report last year as well. They want $5 billion. Now, yeah, $5 billion a year.
That's right. It was $3 billion total. Mm-hmm. $3 billion. Now they want $5
billion. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this.
That's just the money from the government.
Yeah, let me ask you this, because you made a statement about we must hold these people accountable. How do we hold what I call proxy racists accountable? How do we hold these people accountable?
Now, did you say proxy racist?
Yeah, I came up with a term called proxy racism. That means that they're tools of the racist system.
Okay, so they can be black.
Yes.
Okay.
They're the proxies.
All right, so how do you hold these black men and women accountable?
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, the first thing you have to do is you have to identify them.
Okay.
Now, you have a very few, who are going to actually be in support of issues that are really important and pertinent to black people in America.
Okay.
Very few.
Okay.
But for those who are not and who are doing things and voting and supporting issues that are overall not in the favor of black communities, you have to name them. You have to relentlessly and repetitively mention them and put their faces out in front and before the public.
Okay.
You have to do that. That is what you have to do.
And
because you create the political environment that is very untenable, that is very uncomfortable for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the other thing also, black people in this particular presidential election that's coming up this year, you should reevaluate how you vote nationally. The Democrats, as we all know, the Democratic Party have taken blacks for granted. Under Obama pretty much gave all these other fringe groups, most of them, what they wanted.
Right.
The LGBTs, the women, which is primarily white women, he pretty much gave them pretty much what they wanted. But under the Obama administration, black folk have caught more hell in this country than they've caught in the last two generations.
So do we hold them accountable through the ballot box?
You can hold them accountable, yes, of course, through the ballot box. Now, one thing that I've said, and there are a few of us who understand why I'm saying it.
Okay.
One thing that I've said is that if it came down to, let's say, a Hillary Clinton and a Donald Trump, I would vote for Donald Trump before I vote for a Hillary Clinton.
Interesting. Why?
Well, the reason why is this. Is that the best thing that could happen to black people right now would be something that would really light a fire underneath them.
Mm.
They don't need a breath right now to suck on.
Mm-hmm.
And now I don't mean that because Hillary's a female. I mean, she could be a male.
I understood what you meant.
I don't mean the same thing. In other words, they don't need a pacifier.
Right.
What they need is something that's going to further light the fire underneath them.
Force them
because
to unite.
Because blacks have been, in this country, they have been too complacent. And part of that is because of the way that the Democratic Party operates. Now, I'm not saying in your local elections, go out and vote for Republicans. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying at the national level, this time around, if it's a Donald Trump and a Hillary Clinton, you vote for Donald Trump.
Hmm.
Because the thing about it is that at least Donald Trump, he do know a little bit about business. And businessmen, they look at numbers. They play with numbers every day. And when you start playing with unemployment numbers and you start playing with statistics based upon this ethnic group had this unemployment rate, this other ethnic group over here had this unemployment rate. When you start playing with those numbers like that, real businessmen and women, they then say, well, what the hell are we going to do about this? Okay? But politicians don't do anything unless they are pushed and forced to do it politically. And that is the case with the Democratic Party at a national level.
You know,
black people have become too complacent.
You know, I'm not convinced that, you know, Trump, with his business background, because he's been through a lot of bankruptcies and whatnot, and he's taken advantage of the bankruptcy's laws. I'm not convinced that he would do anything to improve the employment situation of black people. But I do agree with you that it would galvanize the black community, and it would make us come together, pool our resources, and stop being complacent, as you say. I could see it having that kind of impact, but I could never vote for that man, just like I could never vote for Hillary Clinton. I'll probably do like I did in 2008 and 2012 and vote for either the Green Party candidate, as I voted for Cynthia McKinney in 2008, running for the Green Party, her and what was her vice president, Rosa Clemente. And then in when the last presidential election, I voted for Gary Johnson of the Libertarian Party, because the Libertarian Party at least is against the drug war and wants to end the drug war. And I did that strategically so that there could be, not that I'm, you know, down with the Libertarian Party and everything they stand for, but I wanted to mix things up here in North Carolina. And so I wanted to help them to get future ballot access here in North Carolina, which they now have. And I plan to vote for libertarians again here. Not talking about the presidential election. I ain't made up my mind on that yet. But you have, like, state offices that I plan to vote for the libertarians, you know, so that they can continue to have ballot access. But, you know, I do believe that there is a chance that if a Donald Trump was elected, that would really put the fire under black people to stop playing games, stop, you know, and start being serious and see that we need to get ourselves together in the people activity area of politics. Okay, so it might have that. Because if you look even back during Jim Crow, you know, outside of the lynchings and all of that kind of crap, during segregation and whatnot, I would say we were better off as a people because we were facing those external obstacles, and it caused us to pool our resources and stick together as a real community instead of just being a place where a bunch of black people live.
Okay, that's excellent. And now to just hit it home on this. In North Carolina, you have a very exponentially high growth, population growth rate of Hispanics.
Yes, we do.
Okay, and that's all over the Southeast.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, for over a 10-year period, the growth rate averaged out to 110% versus under 4% for African Americans, the population growth rate. Now, one of the biggest things that the media has been attacking Donald Trump on has been this illegal immigration, right?
Yes.
Now, most illegal immigrants, when they come into the United States, what community do they first go to?
Black community.
Okay, what does that do to the resources and jobs and other resources in that community?
Well, here, I know what you're saying, but like, for example, most of the black communities that they go into, now I can speak on Charlotte, North Carolina. I live, you know, just right outside of Charlotte. I used to work a lot in Charlotte. I got family that lived there. Where we see, you know, the biggest concentration of Hispanics in black communities are in poor black communities, and those communities are already starved of resources. So then it just makes it even worse because there are no resources and jobs to begin with. So yeah,
okay.
Does have a negative impact on our communities.
But if there are no resources, and if the people aren't dying of starvation, that means they are being fed. Who's feeding them? Where are they getting those paychecks from every month? That's welfare. So you have millions, millions of illegal immigrants who are coming into those black communities. And in some communities, they actually work jobs cheaper than what blacks would work on those jobs for.
Right.
So, and then the black unemployment rate goes up higher.
Right.
So you have a problem with the law. You have people flaunting the law. They're here illegally. Okay? And if they're here illegally in the millions, and Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, what they do with the signing of an executive order, if they make these people legal, then that only exacerbates and creates a bigger problem in those black communities. Ronald Reagan, when he ran for president the second term, he, right before he ran the second time around, he signed into law legalizing 15 million
right, amnesty.
Illegal immigrants in this country.
Yeah, he gave them amnesty.
Okay. So black folk need to start thinking about themselves as a collective group and stop crying for everybody else and working with everybody else, because black folks collectively are the ones who are being left further and further behind. So when Donald Trump comes out and say, hey, look, the illegal immigrants, we got to stop this, folks. He's right. He's totally right. And he's more right for black folk than anybody, because it don't affect mostly white people until the next generation, where you have the children of who were illegal immigrants. You have the children. These children, some of them will go on and they will get a college education. And then instead of them being out there working as manual laborers on the building a house, they become home contractors. Mm-hmm. And that's when some of these white groups start crying and saying, hey, they're underbidding us. They're taking our jobs. But this has been happening with black people for more than a generation.
Right. You know, Mr. West, and I totally agree with the sentiment that we need to be black first. And our primary concern should always be with our own people first and straightening out, you know, the problems that we face. But then as a media reporter, as a person, you know, who looks at all of these various different issues, and I also look at it from a global viewpoint, again, I'm not disagreeing with anything you said, but at the same time, I also have to make it known that I view them the same way I view African immigrants fleeing Africa and going into Europe and whatnot, because of the destabilization of Africa. And for probably over 100 years, you've had American corporations destabilizing South America. If you want to stop them people from coming here, you know what I think the thing that we should be focusing on is ending the drug war. Because you got a number of those South American countries who want to legalize drugs. All right. And they say that if we legalize drugs and whatnot, not only do we stop the violence of the drug cartels and we eliminate that with all these people getting killed in the crossfire or them killing each other or shooting it out with the police, but then we're able to create jobs as well, you know. And so, I mean, that's all I wanted to say. I don't disagree. I'm black first. The black community is my first priority, but as a person who views the news and reports the news from a global perspective, but obviously from a black perspective, that's the way I view I view them as economic refugees fleeing lands that have been destabilized by white corporations.
Well, I'm like this. I'm not a bleeding heart with that.
Okay.
Okay. There are black communities right here in America that have been destabilized forever. And what country do we have to run to? We stick it out right here and we fight back.
Right, right, right. And
that's these people need to stay home and work out their situation at home. Okay. Yeah. Now, one thing that Trump said in the last debate, and it shocked many other Republican candidates up there. He said that the United States has destabilized areas of the world militarily, and they've created this whole refugee situation.
He said that.
Yeah.
I missed that.
Okay. Well, I don't miss nothing.
Say you don't miss nothing. Okay. And he's telling the truth on that. And that's basically what I just said. That we the death squads that we're talking about in Libya, that Hillary Clinton, oversaw in Libya. And you mentioned Reagan. What about the death squads that he sent down there in South America? You know what I'm saying? So it's like you said, history keeps repeating itself all over the globe. But this is my message to, and I did a couple of videos, but this is my message to those immigrants that's coming here. I understand your plight, but you need to stay home and fight and take back your countries, just like we need to fight here in the black community, okay? And then if you think you come in here to live the American dream, no, they come in here to use you as either illegal labor to depress the wages of everybody else, or they gonna put you in one of them immigration detention facilities where they making billions of dollars annually, and then putting you into prison slavery just like they putting black people into prison slavery. So that's what's happening to a lot of them. And a lot of these private prison industries are behind the rumors that were circulating in South America that, if you come now, Obama's going to give you amnesty. And these people sent their children unaccompanied, and we believe from our research, we ain't found a smoking gun yet, but from our abolitionist research, we believe the private prisons were behind those rumors in South America so that they could keep their prisons filled, because that's who was mainly the GEO Group and the Correction Corporation of America. So that's what I say to them: don't come here, because they just simply looking to make a slave out of you too.
Yeah, so I've got to run here in a second, but
yeah.
In closing, I say that the situation in Libya, that was caused by the elite think tanks and bankers, corporate bankers of the United States and Europe, and the situation involving the millions of illegal immigrants, that's also triggered by the same, as we see with the millions of refugees. It's all being triggered by the same. And if we want more of the same, then continue to vote in the same politicians. Mm-hmm. You need a sea change. You need a paradigm shift. And that paradigm shift, I'm sorry to say it, that paradigm shift, the only thing that you got that's very different is a Donald Trump this time. That's all. And he's hated by the Republican establishment and by the Democratic establishment. Now that's saying something. And we need to think about that. And as I said, it's all about business. It's all about business.
Yeah, you're talking about chess versus checkers. You're talking about playing chess versus playing checkers and being all in your emotions and things of that nature and being analytical when you look at things.
Right. Exactly. So Donald Trump is going to be the next president.
You
unless
think
they
so?
Assassinate him beforehand. I'm pretty certain of that. I said that back in August before anybody was saying it. So I'm pretty certain that he is going to be the next one, and it's going to be very different. There are going to be some positives, there are going to be some negatives, but most of all, it's going to be an opportunity for black people in America to collectively go ahead and get their act together.
We need
to
do that.
I am promoting a movement back to the southeastern states. Get out of Michigan. Get out of California, get out of these areas, and put your center of power back down in the area where your ancestors labored at because that is the area where 38% of black people still reside, and that is the area where black folks still own the largest amount of acreage of land. There are lots of things that we can do, and we should also look at getting back into ownership of agriculture.
Right. I would agree with you there. Well, Mr. West, I would just say in closing that regardless of who becomes president, we need to get our act together as a community. We really, really, really need to do that. And regardless, I don't care if it's Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, Marco Rubio, Donald Trump, whoever, we need to be coming together and doing the very things that you were just talking about, and creating a nation within a nation, a strong nation within a nation. But did you have anything else that you wanted to leave the listeners with? And please tell them how they can follow you on social media.
Well, first, Les, I want to thank you for the invite to your show. And you can reach AfroSynergy at AfroSynergy News, which is on YouTube. You can just Google AfroSynergy News. You can also reach me on Facebook, AfroSynergy News on Facebook. You can reach me there. So we're looking in the future, and it won't be in the too far distant future, the establishment of our own nation state, sovereign nation state, right here within what is now called the United States. Not a nation within a nation, but our own sovereign nation state. We must separate, because you're not going to do any better, as you saw and as you see, with the integration. So let's separate and let's build our own. Thank you, Brother Scotty.
Thank you, Mr. West, and you have a safe evening.
Thank you.
All right, folks, I'm going to take a message music break, and then when I come back, I'm going to share this last bit of news. Again, today was the International Holocaust Remembrance Day, that the United Nations chose this day to commemorate the victims of the World War II Holocaust. You had close to 12 million people get killed and by the Nazis and whatnot. You know, where is the commemoration of the Holocaust that black people have been through and still going through? You know, they still committing genocide against us. You know, in Libya, man, that is one of the most egregious examples. I mean, it's right there in your face if you choose to look, and I don't see how we as black people empathize to say that we're part of an African diaspora or part of the black global community, how we can turn our backs on that horrendous crime that was committed against our brothers and sisters in Libya. I say they must be avenged. So when I come back, I'm going to talk about this Righteous Among Nations Award ceremony that was held today at the Israeli embassy, where you had the CEO of the executive branch of USA Inc. give some remarks. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, and I'm broadcasting from behind these enemy lines.
Our people are very serious about not being very serious.
I would like to make a few comments concerning the difference between the Black Revolution and the Negro Revolution. There's a difference. Are they both the same? And if they're not, what is the difference? What is the difference between a Black Revolution and a Negro Revolution? First, what is a revolution? Sometimes I'm inclined to believe that many of our people are using this word revolution loosely, without taking careful consideration what this word actually means and what its historic characteristics are. When you study the historic nature of revolution, the motive of a revolution, the objective of a revolution, and the result of a revolution, and the methods used in a revolution, you may change words, may devise another program. You may change your goal and you may change your mind. Look at the American Revolution in 1776. That revolution was for what? For land. How was it carried? Why did they want land? Independence. How was it carried out? Bloodshed. Number one, it was based on land. The basis of independence. And the only way they could get it was bloodshed. The French Revolution. What was it based on? The landless against the landlord. What was it for? Land. How did they get it? Bloodshed. Was no love lost. Was no compromise. Was no negotiation. I'm telling you, you don't know what a revolution is. Because when you find out what it is, you'll get back in the alley. You'll get out of the way. The Russian Revolution. What was it based on? Land. The landless against the landlord. How did they bring it about? Bloodshed. You haven't got a revolution that doesn't involve bloodshed. And you're afraid to bleed. I saw you're afraid to bleed. Long as the white man sent you to Korea, you bled. He sent you to Germany, you bled. He sent you to the South Pacific to fight the Japanese, you bled. You bleed for white people. But when it comes time to seeing your own churches being bombed and little black girls murdered, you haven't got no blood.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
And welcome back. This is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. The CEO of USA Inc. gave remarks at the Israeli embassy participating in the Righteous Among Nations Award ceremony. I'm going to let you just listen to some of these comments. He was introduced, and I was just talking about Steven Spielberg and his movie Lincoln and promoting this lie that Lincoln was a great emancipator and he took a bullet in the head for white, for black people, enslaved men. Oh, God, man, just the lies that they tell. But he introduced President Obama, and I'm going to let you listen to some of the opening remarks. I ain't going to listen to all of it, but some of them. Let me see if I can find a place in this video.
At the Embassy of Israel. And it's my distinct privilege to introduce my good friend and President of the United States, Barack Obama.
Thank you. Thank you. Good evening, Erev Tov. The Talmud teaches that if a person destroys one life, it is as if they've destroyed an entire world. And if a person saves one life, it is as if they've saved an entire world. What an extraordinary honor to be with you as we honor four righteous individuals whose courage is measured in the lives they saved. One child, one refugee, one comrade at a time, and who, in so doing, helped save our world. I deliver a lot of speeches. Very rarely am I so humbled by the eloquence that has preceded me. Not just in words, but in the acts that we commemorate today. To my dear friend, Steven Spielberg, thanks for your moving and generous words. You spoke of the importance of finding your voice and using it for good, and I know that your work, whether a masterpiece like Schindler's List or the stories that you have so persistently preserved through the Shoah Foundation, is deeply personal. Stephen once said that the story of the Shoah is the story that he was born to tell, rooted in those childhood memories that he just gave you a taste of, the relatives lost, the stories you heard from your family. And Stephen, the whole world is grateful that you found your voice, and for the good that you've done with that voice. It will endure for generations. So on behalf of all of us, we are grateful. To Ambassador and Mrs. Dermer, to Nina Totenberg, our friends from the Israeli Embassy, and Yad Vashem, thank you so much for hosting us today. Let me just add tonight that our thoughts are also with former Israeli President Shimon Peres. I had the opportunity to speak with Shimon earlier this week. I thanked him for his friendship, which has always meant so much to me personally, and I thanked him once again for the shining example of his leadership. With his extraordinary life in the Haganah and as a founding father of the State of Israel, a statesman who's never given up on peace, an embodiment of the great alliance between our two nations, Shimon inspires us all. This evening, we speak for all of us, Israelis, Americans, people around the world, in wishing him a full and speedy recovery. I also want to just note the presence of two of our outstanding senators from the great state of Tennessee. I know that it's rare where you have such an extraordinary native of the state being honored in this way, but I think it's also worth noting that this represents the bipartisan and steadfast support of members of Congress for the security and prosperity of the state of Israel, and they act on that every single day. The survivors, families of the righteous, and those they saved, to all the distinguished guests, we gather to honor the newest of the righteous among the nations and make real the call to never forget, not just on this day of remembrance, but for all days and for all time. And at moments like this, as I listen to the extraordinary stories of the four that we are, memories come rushing back of the times that I've encountered the history and the horror of the Shoah. Growing up, hearing the stories of my great uncle who helped liberate Ohrdruf, part of Buchenwald, and who returned home so shaken by the suffering that he had seen that my grandmother would tell me he did not speak to anyone for 6 months, just went up in his attic. Couldn't fully absorb the horror that he had witnessed. Then having the opportunity to go to Buchenwald myself with my dear friend Elie Wiesel and seeing the ovens, the little camp where he was held as a boy, standing with survivors in the old Warsaw ghetto, and then the extraordinary honor of walking through Yad Vashem with Rabbi Lau and seeing the faces and hearing the voices of the lost of blessed memory. And then taking my own daughters to visit the Holocaust Museum, because our children must know this chapter of our history and that we must never repeat it. The four lives we honor tonight make a claim on our conscience as well as our moral imagination. We hear their stories and we are forced to ask ourselves, under the same circumstances, how would we act? How would we answer God's question, where are you? Would we show the love of Valerie and Marilla Zabieski? Not bad, right? there in Warsaw, they could have been shot for opening their home to a five-year-old girl that they cared for like one of their own, gave her safety and shelter, moments of warmth, family and music, a shield from the madness outside until her mother could return. Would we have the extraordinary compassion of Lois Gundon? She wrote that she simply hoped to add just another ray of love to the lives of these youngsters who had already endured so much. And by housing and feeding as many Jewish children as she could, her ray of love always shone through and still burns within the families of those she saved. Would we have the courage of Master Sergeant Roddy Edmonds? I know your dad said he was just doing his job, but he went above and beyond the call of duty, and so did all those who joined in that line. Faced with the choice of giving up his fellow soldiers or saving his own life, Roddy looked evil in the eye and dared a Nazi to shoot. His moral compass never wavered. He was true to his faith, and he saved some 200 Jewish American soldiers as a consequence. It's an instructive lesson, by the way, for those of us Christians. I cannot imagine a greater expression of Christianity to say, I too am a Jew. And I ask these questions because even as the Holocaust is unique, a crime without parallel in history, the seeds of hate that gave rise to the Shoah, the ignorance that conspires with arrogance, the indifference that betrays compassion, those seeds have always been with us. They have found root across cultures and across faith and across generations. The ambassador mentioned the story of Cain and Abel. It's deep within us. And too often, especially in times of change, especially in times of anxiety and uncertainty, we are too willing to give into a base desire to find someone else, someone different, to blame for our struggles. So here tonight, we must confront the reality that around the world, anti-Semitism is on the rise. We cannot deny it. When we see some Jews leaving European cities where their families have lived for generations because they no longer feel safe, when Jewish centers are targeted from Mumbai to Overland Park, Kansas, when swastikas appear on college campuses, when we see all that and more, we must not be silent. An attack on any faith is an attack on all of our faiths. It is an attack on that golden rule at the heart of so many faiths, that we ought to do unto others as we would have done to us. For Americans in particular, we should understand that it's an attack on our diversity, on the very idea that people of different backgrounds can live together and thrive together. Which is why your father was right. We are all Jews. Because anti-Semitism is a distillation, an expression of an evil that runs through so much of human history. And if we do not answer that, we do not answer any other.
Okay, I'm tired of listening to his bullshit. All right, y'all excuse me, but I really dislike this man for his dishonesty, his intellectual dishonesty. You know, to say that this, what happened in the Holocaust, look, that was bad. It happened to more than just Jews. You had millions of other people, gypsies, black people, people who had disabilities, whether they, you know, had mental deficiencies or physical deficiencies. You had millions of people, all right, killed by these Nazis. All right, now I'm not going to go into the whole history of the American banks and the families that supported the Nazis. I'm not going to go into the whole history of the Nazis coming to America to study its eugenics programs and how they were mistreating and abusing and murdering black people so that they can then go to their own country and implement the same programs. I'm not, you know, but for this man to sit up here and say that, you know, nothing in history parallels what happened to the Jews in Germany. And again, it wasn't just Jews that was targeted. All right. When I know from my own research, from listening to other people who are more knowledgeable than me about the Holocaust that has occurred on this continent by white people against African descendant people, let's just say non-white people, the American Indian, African descendant people, and then to know that Jews participated in that, okay? So just forgive me for being a stickler for the truth, all right? The African Holocaust, which is still ongoing, all right? It's still ongoing. It's unparalleled in world history, I would say. Anyone talks about anti-Semitism is on the rise and all of that. I can't speak to that because most of the hate that I see is being directed towards black people globally, okay, globally, whether it's the African immigrant who is fleeing Africa because of the European and Americans destabilizing those regions so that they could have hedge money over them, steal their resources, and so these people flee to Europe. Now they're being targeted and attacked in Europe. We just did a program about Afropop, this television series, and we interviewed a filmmaker. I forget her name, but she lives in Denmark, and she called us from Denmark, and she was telling us how the politicians over there is targeting black people and saying these racist things openly. You know, when he talks about, you know, little kids being shot and whatnot. Look, man. Where were your comments? Where were your passionate speeches? You know, as black people are being gunned down, including our children, are being gunned down right here in America by the Nazis, all right? By the descendants of the slave catchers and whatnot. I just don't have patience for these people, man. I really don't. I don't have patience for a liar such as this, and I just couldn't take no more. But I had listened to more of it, and he talked about pledging how both parties, the Republicans and the Democrats, are together in their support for the security of Israel. And no doubt they have bipartisan support. But see, this is the problem with black people when you look at it versus these Jews here in America. See, they got their act together, all right, politically. And that is how they can get Republicans and Democrats to come together to give the largest welfare checks every year to Israel, a country that is widely recognized to be engaged in international human rights crimes against the Palestinian peoples, whether they be black Palestinians or Arab Palestinians. That don't matter. The skin color don't matter. It's about justice versus injustice. And then when we even look at the black Jews of Israel who have been demonstrating towards the end of 2015, suffering the same kind of police brutality and terrorism that black people face here in America. I don't hear him talking about none of that. These are some of the biggest, I mean, Israel supported apartheid in South Africa. All right. They support the blood diamond trade and all of that. I mean, these people are involved in, and I'm talking about their government, are involved in some of the most heinous crimes. We ain't got to go back to World War II. We can go back to right after World War II. And how they have been murdering people and taking land. So for me to sit up here and listen to this man, he ain't never said nothing about black people in a similar vein. Want to talk about Nazi swastikas and whatnot? The last time I read about a Nazi swastika was being painted in shit, in human excrement, on a bathroom wall to terrorize black people on a U.S. college campus. And then, you know, just following up on our interview with Mr. West, for this man to be the CEO of the Obama administration and the lies that they told that led to the slaughter of all those black African people in Libya, and then for him to sit up here and act like, you know, he's some kind of humanitarian and not one of the biggest hypocrites on the planet. It just disgusts me, man. It just really disgusts me. He want to mention his Christian faith. Well, this is what Romans 3rd chapter verse 10 says. All right. As it is written, there is none righteous, not even one. When he want to talk about God and all that, there is none who understands. There is none who seeks for God. There are no righteous people. None. None. And so for them to have this ceremony talking about honoring the righteous, man, give me a damn break. Area code 340, you're on Black Talk Radio News. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Yeah, bro, you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Hello. Yeah, man, I'm calling from the Virgin Islands, St. Thomas.
Thank you for calling in. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I was listening to you talking about the Danish. Here used to be a colony of the Danish, known as the Danish West Indies, and trust me, those people was brutal. When they're talking about brutal, brutal, you know, how bad they did to black folks here on this island, and still they have groups here on these islands calling themselves friends of Denmark. And in a couple of months, they're going to be celebrating the 100th anniversary of the transfer of these islands to the United States. You know, the United States so-called bought the islands in 1917 from Denmark after the Africans here on this island had fought for the independence from Denmark. So Denmark had nothing to sell. And then when the United States took over the islands in 1917, they turned it over to the Department of Navy. So you have the Marines, the U.S. Marines brutalizing Native people. And that is why Navy ships don't come here no more, because there's a lot of people who still have strong resentment against them for what they've been doing, beating up the local people, raping women, and doing all these disastrous things. So what you're saying is right on target, and I'm very glad that I found your talk show. I'll be tuning into it more and more and more, but you are speaking the truth, you know?
Thank you.
So I'm very thankful to know that you're on here.
Thank you for chiming in, and yes, I'm very aware of the U.S. Virgin Islands. I hate to even call it that, but it is. It's a colony of the United States, and we have a...
I was saying up to today, the United States refused to basically give the people their right to choose their own destiny as stated by the United Nations Charter. And then you have now on the other hand of St. John that's been taken over by the federal government under the guise of a national park, stealing native people land every day. And up to now, the people cannot hear from the Secretary of Interior to this issue of boundary park under the guise of stealing more and more indigenous people land and selling it to rich what's going on here today in 2016.
Well, I'm glad that you found us, and I hope that you will share our radio station with others. And I hope that, you know, we have a section on our website that where you can submit your own news. And if you have any news that you would like to get out, please don't hesitate to send it to us, and I will share it on our website, through our social media, as well as on this station.
Well, I have this great friend. He's a historian. He studied under, he's from here, but he studied under Van Sertima at City College in New York. Mm-hmm. And he's a great historian. So what I'm going to do when you have some time, I'm going to get him to call in to your station and give you a history of these islands, and you see the brutality and suffering that happened on, you know, the Department of Navy. And after the Department of Navy, they turned it on, put it under the Department of Interior. And then you had these racist presidents like Richard Nixon, Harry Truman, John F. Kennedy, that took all the business away from the local person and gave it to their rich, I mean, to white folks who was poor and broke, and make them millionaires. And the native people continue to suffer to this day because of what Kennedy, John F. Kennedy did for the people and the policies he set forth, where all the businesses in these islands, and they were turned over to white people.
Let me do this. Let me take down my email address. That's the best way for me to arrange interview and give some time to the history professor you say is in New York. My email address.
His name is I'm gonna give me an email.
Yeah, my email address is ADMIN as in administrator, but admin at blacktalkradionetwork.com. Got okay. it?
Yeah, okay. So I'll give him the info, and he will contact you, okay?
All right. Thank you for calling in, man, and I stand in solidarity with the indigenous population of the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Yeah, and then keep in mind now that there's a lot of history here that goes way back from when people first came out of Africa, coming to this part of the Caribbean. They stop on these little islands, and there's a lot of history here that people don't talk about. And then they'll go over to Central America. Mm-hmm. So when they get to Central America, then some will go all the way down to the tip of the south, and some went all the way up to the north. So there's a lot of history here that have graves and everything of these ancient people that traveled here. And then most of these so-called scientists would always say they were Amerindian, but this other guy, scientist, came here a few years ago. And then he said these remains, human remains, are of African people, Negroid. And then on the other island of St. Croix the other day, they found some graves and a lot of historical stuff. The Smithsonian Institute came, sealed off the area with the National Park, dig up all the graves, and then took them out of here. And not one local official even get to see what they were taking out of these islands. And that's what's going on.
Wow. Well, thank you for that report. I look forward to hearing from you again, as well as from the history professor, so that we can bring this information to our people. Thank you again.
Yeah, man. Take care.
Wow. Let me just share this. We do Political Prisoner Radio, even though it's on hiatus right now, until we are able to work some things out behind the scenes. But we have talked about on Political Prisoner Radio the Virgin Island Five. Let me share this information with you. The Virgin Island Five are a group of activists accused of murdering 8 people in the U.S. Virgin Islands. The murders took place during a turbulent period of rebellion on the islands. During the 1970s, as with much of the world, a movement to resist colonial rule began to grow in the U.S.-occupied Virgin Islands. From 1971 to 1973, there was a small-scale Mau Mau rebellion taking place on the islands. This activity was downplayed by the media for fear it would damage the tourist industry, which the island's survival depends on. Let me see. I'm a post this to Political Prisoner Radio Facebook page so that you can read the rest, because we're running out of time here. Tando Radio Show is coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. All right, so yeah, the struggle of black people is global, man. It's global. All right, and wow, for the Smithsonian to go in there and steal, that's theft. But again, we have these proxy racist, you know, non-white leaders, whatever you want to call them, and they sell us out, man. They sell us out. They sell us out for butter biscuits. All right, so they can be more comfortable on the plantation. It's time out for that. It's just time out for it. So glad to hear from the brother from the Virgin Islands. But yeah, getting back to President Obama. Look, I'm going to close it out with this. This is just, it's just, I'm not minimizing those who lost their lives at the hands of the Nazis, be they Jewish, be they communists, be they Afro-Germans, be they people with disabilities, be they ethnic gypsies or anything like that. It's awful funny, though, how those people get forgotten. All right, but I'm not trying to minimize what happened to them. All right, but the African Holocaust is worldwide and is ongoing. All right, and we need to recognize that fact. And I find it hypocritical for a war criminal like Obama, all right, who in 2011 facilitated the mass murder of black people and the displacement of black people and overthrowing a pan-African nation called Libya, all for what? Because they were lifting themselves up by their bootstraps and was going to lift up Africa, and therefore with the rise of Africa, so goes the African diaspora, so that you can keep your funny money, your Federal Reserve notes propped up, so that you can help France dominate African communities African nations that still being colonized and being forced to use the French franc. I find it very hypocritical for you to be a keynote speaker talking about a Holocaust, talking about human rights crimes, when your ass need to be brought up on human rights charges your damn self. Not to mention how you support one of the most racist nations on the face of the planet in Israel, who not only abuses the Palestinian people, but even abuses Ethiopian, non-white, non-Ashkenazi German Jews. All right, non-European Jews. And this was published actually in Forbes.com, as well as a number of what they call mainstream publications, about, and Israel's no longer denying that they was running a sterilization program that cut the birth rates of the Ethiopian Jewish community in Israel by, I read, as much as 50% in 10 years. And I linked to one of those articles, but you can do your own research. You can do your own research. Okay? And so I'm just disgusted at this charade that they had going on in Washington, D.C. at the Israeli embassy. Righteous Among Nations Award. Ain't none righteous. Anyway, with that said, I need to go ahead and wrap it up as we make way for Tando Radio Show, where Brother Dave will be talking about the assassination of depositors. He's talking about financial information and whatnot. So y'all want to stay tuned for that. All right. Because Brother Dave, as you heard Mr. West talk about the coming collapse of America. And Brother Dave has talked about that for a very long time. and viewing it through different lenses, whether it's the economic collapse or whatever's going on. But, you know, he shares a lot of valuable information. I highly recommend that people listen to Tando Radio Show and check out some of their past podcasts. Now, with that said, recognize the fact that we live behind the enemy lines of USA Inc., where they practicing 21st century slavery and human trafficking. People are being murdered in the streets by agents of the state, and you need to develop battlefield awareness so you don't become a victim. So, you know, you can decrease the likelihood that you become a victim, because there is nothing that you can do to guarantee that you won't become a victim, but you can be proactive in trying to prevent that from happening to you, to yours, into our communities. And I'm just going to keep it real with you. We got to get our stuff together, not only here in the United States, but as a global black community. There's no reason that we should be suffering what we suffer. All right. And we need to get ourselves together and get us back to a place of power. Then we're not begging and we're making demands. That said, peace and blessings to all.
We have to begin to move to control our community. Everything that's in your community that you don't control is a weapon against you. Public education as it exists today is a weapon against black people. TV and news media, especially the WPP, White Power Press, White People's Paper, and White People's Power are enemies against black people. What the white press does is that it makes black people an enemy of black people.